We travel for so many different reasons. Sometimes we travel for adventure. Sometimes we travel to relax and get away. And other times we travel to heal and to feel empowered. Join me on an off-the-beaten-path trip to Santiago, Chile.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Marvels and Mishaps of Travel. Recently, Monica and I both planned trips to South America, and yet we did not coordinate to plan them together. So over the next few episodes, we're going to be discussing both of our recent trips to South America, but today we're going to be talking about Monica's most recent trip to Chile.
Thanks, Jess. Yeah, so once again, the podcast partners who talk about travel but have yet to travel together, we didn't really coordinate. Of course, you know, our calendars don't necessarily line up. And this particular trip to Chile, I had actually planned with a romantic interest. However, the relationship status changed leading up to the trip, which led me to make some changes, led me to make some tweaks in the plan, which I'm going to be talking about today, as well as, of course, all of the marvels and mishaps along the way. So let me start off by talking about my thought process in choosing Chile, because it doesn't seem to be at the top of everyone's list. So leading up to the trip, friends and family, as well as on the trip, a lot of people were like, well, what brought you here? Like, why Chile? What's there to go see? So I wanted to kind of talk about what my thinking was. First of all, everywhere is on my list. So it was a little bit of like, well, why not Chile? But also, I'm very involved in the wine industry. I have a big passion for learning about and tasting wine, especially in the country that it's grown. And Chile has an enormous wine culture. And so that was a huge draw for me on a personal note. And also, when we originally chose Chile as the destination during our winter break, we wanted to visit somewhere warm. And so moving towards the southern hemisphere to experience that warmer weather was a big draw as well. Now that, of course, came with a higher price because it was closer to peak season, a holiday week. But we planned for that financially in order to like really enjoy the country during the perfect like summer season that they were having. What I didn't know going into it, that was a huge draw and hopefully will be a draw there for some listeners, is that Santiago especially is nestled in between two mountain ranges. We've got the coastal mountains and then you have the Andes. And so when you're there, everywhere you look, you're just surrounded by these stunning mountains. So the landscape is beautiful. I think I'm going to mention later, there's also many other parts of Chile. It's, you know, obviously a very long, kind of skinny country. And so there's so many different locations to go and visit. You have the Atacama Desert to the north. Santiago, the capital, is where I was. There's the Lake Districts a little bit further south. And then Patagonia, which is a region that stretches across both Chile and Argentina. And Patagonia has a launching point for cruises to Antarctica. And so it was a country I will return to as well. A lot of people were asking me about the food and everything, because again, it's not a well-known cuisine, but you're going to get some of the best seafood as well as steaks. They also have their own style of empanada, a little bit different than other areas of South America. So for all these reasons, I really just couldn't wait to go on this trip. In addition, since I had to make some changes along the way, since it went from a two-person trip to a one-person trip, I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the decision-making that I did, like how I booked tours, why I chose the way they did because of me being solo. And these are all things to take into consideration on a solo trip. And it was good practice for me too, because it's been a while since I've done a solo trip. And it honestly was just what I needed. It gave me a sense of power. It gave me a sense of healing. It gave me some closure to that chapter of my life. And I really wanted to kind of take my power back and what was mine all along, which was the travel, which, you know, is part of the relationship that I was in, but originally was mine. So this was a really important trip on multiple levels. I'm looking forward to sharing all the highlights with you as well as some of the mishaps.
We're looking forward to it.
The trip started out with a pretty big mishap. I'm packed. Everything's going well. Unlike many people at the holidays this year, we're in December of 2022, and Southwest had this horrendous cancellation, and there was people stranded. And, you know, so I'm getting to the airport on Christmas Day, and I'm like, okay, I got to be ready for a mess. And it wasn't. It was anything but. It was a ghost town. I've never seen an airport quieter. Flights were on time. Smooth sailing, no hiccups in security. I'm like, what's going? It's like too good to be true, right? Something bad is going to happen.
Yeah, it's right? Like the calm before the storm. Before the storm, so to speak.
So I get all the way to Chile, and I'll tell you what, Santiago is a lot further than I think I had like really mentally prepared myself for. It was
the map going south across the equator takes so much longer than you think it will.
Because you have to go up and over that curvature.
Yeah, there's that curvature. Yeah.
So I flew out of Dulles. My layover was in Bogota, Colombia. So that was a 6-hour haul. And then I ran through the airport with all my bags and jumped on another flight. To Santiago. Yeah, classic hour and half layover where they no time for food or water, just like, get to the plane.
You're like, not only are you traveling really far, you also have a mini marathon somewhere in the middle. You have to earn
and no
your trip.
Food or water and just like figure it out. You know, just figure it out. Just, you know, eat when you get there. So that's what I did. And I arrived in Santiago, and again, you know, no issues in the airport. I'm flying through. I got my Google Translate app because I don't speak Spanish. Although everybody assumes I do because of the way I look, which is super fun to explain. And I get all the way out to the taxis, and I've got my official taxi, and I'm like checking the signage and making sure I'm getting into the right vehicle. And it's an older woman driving the taxi cab, and we're driving. And I always follow taxis and Ubers when I'm traveling by myself on my own phone.
Yeah, so, like, same. You have to, because otherwise you're like, why are you veering in the wrong direction?
Yeah. Or taking the scenic route and upcharging me. So I always like make sure that I'm headed in the right direction. Yeah. Even if it's a different route, I'm like, okay, the trip is getting shorter, not longer. Like, we're heading the right way. So I'm following along. And so my head is down for a good part of it. And we pull into Santiago proper, and we're getting closer to the downtown area. There's skyscrapers, and it's probably about 5:30, 5:45 in the morning. And so it's dusk. And we're at a traffic light, and we go to make a left-hand turn. And my hotel's probably like a block and a half away. I mean, I could almost see the building from where we were. And all of a sudden, there's a thud. And I look up, and there is a body on the windshield. Like, full on, something out of the movie, like arms splayed across.
And you're like sleep deprived, and then you have this, and then like, I complete see this, shock.
And I gasp. Right? I cover my mouth.
As you would. Yeah, anybody would.
The taxi comes to a stop. She pulls over. The body rolls off the hood of the car and onto the street and is laying in the street there. And I'm frozen at this point. I'm completely frozen. Yeah. Another car pulls over and a couple other people jump out. Somebody comes like running down the street and comes over to help. And I'm thinking, just call 911, like call the police. But again, I can't even communicate because I don't know the language. Mm-hmm. Then a couple of police officers come by, and I see like the flashing lights and everything. The woman who was hit, she was dressed all in black, and who knows, she might have had her head down in her phone too. I don't know. I didn't actually see it happen.
Hard to tell.
But as I'm sitting there and kind of like watching this scene unfold, because I didn't even get out of the car. And at one point, the taxi driver says to the police officer, and of course, I don't know what they're saying, but just based on facial expressions like
gestures,
and pointing, she's pointing at me, and the police officer is looking at her like, you've got to be kidding. You know, and I think she was asking him if she could complete the trip and take me to my hotel. And he was like, no, hit a pedestrian. You are not going to get back in your car and drive it now. Like, are you kidding?
Yeah.
So I get my Google Translate out, and I'm like, can I get my bags and walk to the hotel? And again, this is something really important if you're thinking of any kind of solo travel. I pulled the phone out, and the taxi driver turns to look at it first, and she went to take the phone out of my hand to read what was on it. And I like clenched down, like, because the last thing I want is somebody else
lose
holding
your phone.
My phone.
Yeah.
So I'm following her with my hand on my phone, not letting it go. And then she she turned away. I don't know if something was said. And then I showed it to the police officer because at that point, he was the one who had to make that decision, not the taxi driver. And he said it was fine for me to go because, again, I wasn't sure if I'd have to give a statement or, you know, something like that. But at the same time, without me knowing the language, I don't know how much that would have helped anyway. Right. So she let me get my bags and I just walked away from the whole situation. And it was just the weirdest thing. Too much to process.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I walked away from a very life altering event for two other people and like carried on my vacation. Like it was just,
And you're like,
you know, later trying to process it. But I mean, we were talking earlier, Jess, about just, you know, so much of your mental capacity is taken with just taking care of yourself.
You're in survival mode. Yeah, you're in survival mode and you got to take care of you and you got to get to where you need to go and make sure you're safe. And when stuff like this comes up and you know it's handled, it only makes sense
just
that
walk
you continue
away.
On. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, like something like when you said that, it made me feel a lot better because I have felt like guilty, you know, not being able to do more. But at the same time, I saw that she was alive. She was breathing. She was talking. Yeah, like, so it was like, okay, she's going to be okay. But at the same time, like, this is just this weird cross section of my life and it's over now. And I have to like,
I have to get myself safe. You don't have the mental, emotional energy at that point to engage. And if you're not able to help, in fact, having extra people there might become more of an obstruction of like,
especially one who doesn't speak Spanish.
Process. Yeah. Yeah. So you did the right thing. It's just like in that moment, you feel shitty that you're like, I just witnessed this and I can't do anything. So
exactly. So what a way to start the trip, right? So I promise it's all
like
uphill from here.
Dark note. Yeah.
I mean, it was quite a mishap, but it honestly was really like the only one during the trip. I got checked into the hotel just fine. I treated myself for this trip. So we've talked about different types of accommodations. You know, Airbnbs, hostels, and I looked into several different options. Santiago is, and Chile in general, is not the cheapest South American country, but it's definitely very reasonable by American standards. And so I could have got like a nicer apartment with like a rooftop pool running about like, I think it was like $270 for the entire week.
That's
thought about it, I know myself as an extrovert and also for the safety piece of it, of just having hotel staff, having the security of a doorman, having a restaurant and bar right there. So I wasn't like wandering around the city all alone at night or anything. And so I decided to kind of upgrade and get something a little bit more luxurious for this trip, just, you know, coming out of a health issue, coming out of a breakup and just kind of giving myself that gift. So
yeah, some self-care. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But also with the safety piece in mind as well. Mm-hmm. So the hotel is beautiful. And then as far as the other planning pieces of this, right, because, you know, when you travel solo, I think a lot of people's fears is that you're going to be lonely for the trip, right? I'm not going to have anybody to talk to. So in order to combat that and also to kind of feed my extroversion, God, it sounds like a disease, extroversion.
You have extroversion.
Your aversion.
My extrovertedness.
Yes.
That's much more – why is that more positive? What I did was I booked like small group day tours each day. So Santiago proper has some beautiful sights. I saved that for the last day that I was there. I always leave like a day of my itinerary kind of open in case something comes up like during the trip.
And
I'm like,
good to do. Or if you
want
to
do that.
Right,
I've got that flexibility. And so I had all these small group tours booked. And since I'm – a student of wine, and Chile makes some of the world's best wine, I made that kind of a focus. And that was really for my own, you know, interests and purposes and, you know, another way for me to really kind of like personalize this trip. So the flight got in, like I said, at like 5:30 in the morning. And the first excursion that I booked was didn't leave until 3 p.m. because it was part of the trip was like stargazing. So I actually booked my hotel from like the day before. So I arrived like early morning on the 26th, but I booked the hotel from the 25th so that this way I could get right in, check in, unpack, crash for a few hours, get some sleep.
Freshen up. Yeah.
Yeah. That Bogota leg is a red eye. So you fly like from like 10 p.m. until like 5:30 in the morning and unpacked, got settled, and then met my tour at 3. And it was probably the best tour of the trip, honestly.
Nice.
So basically, it was advertised as the Andes Mountains, hot springs, barbecue, and stargazing was kind of like the title.
That sounds like a wonderful combination.
It really was. Yeah. So it was through, I never know how to say the website. It's Viator or Viator,
Viator, yeah. I've heard various sayings, different pronunciations. So
yeah, we'll everybody seems to know what I talk about. And I'm like, you know that one, that Viator,
you know that
or Viator,
one. It's part
whatever
of TripAdvisor. Yeah.
So I use them for everything. I like the, it's just very user friendly. Their app is really good.
My booking was
in one place then. So I didn't have to like find a bunch of different emails. It was all like downloaded into my Apple wallet and everything on my phone. And so they met the tour at 3 o'clock. And we head off into the Andes, and it's a couple hours. So they did a good job of like breaking up the drive. So we stopped at, they called it like the Chocolate House, and it was by a particular architect, had a very like kind of cartoonish look to it. We got some coffee, we got some chocolate, ice cream, whatever, took a bathroom break, took some pictures. And then the next stop was at the Vale of the Bride waterfall. So we got to walk right up to a waterfall, take some pictures. Nice. And at that point, the roads were getting a little bit more rugged, would be the nice way to say it.
We had something similar on our trip, but I'll talk about that later. Yeah.
And we get back all in the car, and we're heading through. And I mean, it was pretty obvious that not a lot of vehicles come up here very often. I mean, it was I lost cell phone service. Like, there was nothing out there. And we finally get to, like, the hot springs, probably, like, late afternoon at this point. And it was beautiful. They were – so it was actual volcanic waters that they had, like, you know, funneled down off the mountain. Yeah. And they had sort of created these sort of, like, cemented pools, and they were tiered. So the hottest pool was at the top. Then as the water trickled down, it got cooler and cooler. So you could kind of, like, pick your temperature based on, like – as the water fell through the hot springs, it was cooling. So, kind of like it regulated itself.
Yeah.
Right. So I could barely get my toe in the first one. And then the second hottest and the third hottest were the most comfortable. But it was pretty rustic. I mean, I've been to other hot springs. Just right. So it was pretty rustic. I mean, the guides were good about being like, make sure you use the bathroom here because the one of the hot springs are not great.
They always know where you need to use the bathroom. You know, they've had an array of like bad experiences with people having to go with the wrong
time. Listen to your tour guide when he's telling you where to go to the bathroom.
They know.
I do wish, when I was packing for the trip, one of the things I always bring with me is a microfiber towel, like a large, like camping towel.
I brought one too. Yeah.
They're about $12 on Amazon. And I realized as I was packing for this trip that I had left mine in one of the campsites in Banff back in August.
Oh no.
And because of the holidays, Amazon wasn't going to get me one until earlier. And I went over even to Target and they were like cleaned out for the holidays. And so I had like a hand towel with me, which was better than nothing. But I just actually ordered a new microfiber towel. So I'm like, I'm not messing around. I'm not going to remember. So I'm going to do it now and put it with my travel stuff that I have.
You should have asked me. I have two.
I don't know that I would have had time to get it from you before I left. You might have already been in somewhere else. I don't. You might have still been in Patagonia for all I know. So anyway, so that was fabulous. So then they, you know, we changed clothes. We all got back in the car, and then the other piece of this trip, this particular excursion, was that I really like clicked with my group. So it was like
that's
another
awesome.
Woman about my
I love
age
that. Yeah.
And her like 11-year-old daughter was on the trip, which I teach middle school part, you know, my full-time gig.
Yeah.
And so it was nice like having, you know, oh, like I teach your age group, you know, and she was like, yeah, wow, cool. Teachers, this is a cool teacher, you know?
Yeah.
And then another couple who was on their honeymoon, they were just hilarious. And another gentleman who is also well-traveled and tons of stories to share. So we just had like a really like nice group of people that, I mean, and big belly laughs and just, we just like on all really
very
clicked.
Authentic.
You don't always get that,
yeah,
but it
true.
Definitely enhanced the trip. We headed off to a lodge, and they had us with a couple of fire pits. They had about 6 bottles of Chilean wine. They were grilling for us. There was snacks on the table, and literally everywhere you turned was more and more beautiful scenery. I mean, just all the valleys of the, and we were just nestled in this valley of the Andes Mountains. And, you know, you had the drier, more arid mountains, and then behind it, like the snowy peaks. And at one point,
layers of beauty.
At one point, as the sun was going down, the snowy peaks in one of the valleys of where the mountains were kind of meeting was glowing red. And they pointed it out to us, and it was the glow from the lava of the volcano there.
Yeah, I was going to say, it must have been volcanic.
I got the best picture of it, and it was really a really spectacular setting. Nice. And then we did have a little bit too much cloud cover to do a whole lot of stargazing, but we did we were able to pick out some of the planets, and the moon was really pretty that night. So it was just like you just have that moment where you're like, is this really happening right now? Am I like sitting in the middle of the Andes Mountains, like, you know, eating delicious grilled food, drinking wine with all these new people around a campfire? And that was the first night. So it was really like, spectacular.
Can't get better than that. Yeah. Right.
And then the next 2 days were actually focused around wines. Like I mentioned, I'm, a student of wine, a guru, a sommelier. You know, Jess and I have met through the wine industry. I've continued in my wine journey. And one of the things that I do now part-time is I do wine education classes. And so really –
And you're awesome at it too.
Thanks. I like to be able to have those experiences in a wine country, you know, really – enjoy the terroir, you know, talk to the people, eat the food, you know, kind of take in the terroir, they call it, right?
The
minerals, the ground, the earth, the sun, the wind, you know, which way the slopes are facing. And I'm not going to bore everybody with all the geeky wine details. If you want the geeky wine details, go to my Instagram. It's at I Drink Wine and I Know Things. And you can follow me with more wine knowledge there. But so that was a really big part of it. So Maipo Valley is to the south of Santiago. So I spent a day in Maipo. We did three vineyards there. We went to Undaraga, which is kind of a little bit more commercial, but they had some fantastic wines. Learned a lot about the different varietals, some of their production methods and how it affects the flavors of the wines. We went to Terra Mater, which translates to Mother Earth, and it's actually an Italian family-owned vineyard, and they're actually experimenting with growing some Italian varietals and are coming out with a delicious Zinfandel. Chile is known mostly for Carmenere is kind of their signature grape because Carmenere is very hard to find in France anymore. It is a French varietal, but Chile is the biggest producer of it now. They're coming out with some delicious Cabernet Sauvignons and delicious Sauvignon Blancs. And I even had some Chardonnays, which ended up actually being my favorite Chilean, was a Chardonnay.
Nice.
And
do you normally like Chardonnay? Are you normally big on it?
I'm a advocate for Chardonnay because it is so versatile. And again,
doesn't
have wine details on the Instagram.
Do stainless steel and
lots of production methods. Grows all over the world. Grows in different climates. It's always try the Chardonnay is kind of what I would tell people. But anyway, so, you know, being able to taste some different varietals, like through the Italian vineyards, was kind of nice to see, like, what else Chile is experimenting with as far as wine. And then our last stop was actually at a sustainable farm. And they were not only doing their own wine, but they were promoting nearby vineyards wines. And then they actually took us on a tour of the farm and talked about a lot of the sustainable farming methods that they're doing, grafting fruit trees and raising animals. I got to hold the chicken.
Nice.
The chicken fell asleep in my arms. So now I'm like, I don't know if I can eat chickens anymore. I mean, his little beak was like nestling into the crook of my elbow. It was the cutest thing ever. I know. Who knew that chickens like to snuggle, but
Apparently they do.
It was adorable. Yeah. I had lots of pictures of that. Yeah, they had alpacas. They had horses. So it was a really fun, like, kind of way to sort of, like, end the trip and sort of understand, like, the farming aspect and, like, where Chile is headed in that direction. So that was Maipo. The following day, and I didn't mean to do two wine days back-to-back because – as you can imagine, that has its own effects.
Recovery, you know, factory period.
But It turned out that four of the five excursions that I booked was through the same tour agency. And so they were like, we don't have enough people to go on this tour, so we're going to have to like flip your itinerary around. So I ended up going to Casablanca region.
You were just forced to do more wine.
If I have to, you know, twist my arm, more wine. So Casablanca, which I was kind of a last minute ad. I had originally planned to go to Colchagua, but that would have required renting a car, and I didn't want to do that all by myself. So I was like, let me find another something to do. So Casablanca wine region is to the west of the city. So that's on the way to a coastal town called Valparaíso, which is further down. So we went to Casablanca this day, and that actually ended up being my favorite. So Casablanca is actually very similar to the Napa Valley in California. Very similar climate, similar slopes. And so they are growing more white wines. So again, Sauvignon Blanc and Chardonnay. But they're also growing some like light-bodied reds. We tasted a Pinot Noir. They had Syrah. They had a couple of red blends that were delicious. So totally different style and flavors than Maipo Valley, given the altitude difference and given the coastal winds and given the direction of the slope. So that was Casablanca. We actually did four vineyards there. There was, we started at a French place called Villard. Then we went over to Vinamar. Then we went to, oh gosh, did I have that much wine at that point? It's escaping me. There was two more that we went to.
You're like, the rest is a blur.
We went to Casa Bosques, which was actually one on the top 50 vineyards in the world, according to Forbes. It was like number 30 of the top 50, which we had dinner there or lunch. It was phenomenal. I mean, I think the food may have been even better than the wine. And then we ended up at Bodegas Rey, which was, they did a lot of like ancient methods. They had an orange wine that they were doing in like clay pots and really kind of like unusual, more like ancient style of vineyards. So it was really a fantastic, well-rounded like variety of experiences in Casablanca. So that was day three, we're up to. Day four, I went to another excursion to the Inca Lagoon. So this was actually to like the northeastern part from Santiago, a couple of hours drive. And it's actually this ski resort, but of course I was there in their summer, right? December is summertime in the southern hemisphere. And so the ski, you know, there's obviously no snow on the mountains, but lots of like interesting like ski facts and stuff like that. And again, they did a good job of breaking up the trip with a couple of stops on the way. You know, one was just like a rest stop, gas station, grab a cup of coffee, keep moving. So they didn't actually stop for a lunch on this trip. Like I said, we stopped at the gas station and he was kind of like, load up on snacks. You know, we're going to have a stop. We have a snack. But there wasn't like a meal offered on this
excursion.
So just
like chips and candy bars
Stopped at a we stopped at a vineyard. Of all the places in Chile to South, it was like, it's not a Chilean excursion unless you're drinking some wine along the way. So this was the Aconcagua Valley. So again, northeast of it. And actually, this particular area in Chile is only about 40 miles from Mendoza, Argentina. So that's like the motherland from Malbec, right?
Yeah.
So they actually included several bottles of wine, and they end up taking us to this restaurant that makes the most delicious empanadas. And they have some animals on the property again, and we got to visit the llamas. It's not llamas. It's llamas. And actually, some of the people were saying llamas with a J in it. So I guess depending on like where in South America you're from, it's llamas or llamas. So we got, you know, I've got my llama selfies, and we ate empanadas and drank wine. And then we went to the Inca Lagoon. So that was a really fun little stop. But anyway, we ended up at the Inca Lagoon, which has a legend. And the legend is that there was an Incan princess, and she on her wedding day, she tragically passed away. And her groom was so grief-stricken that he buried her at the bottom of this lagoon. And when he did, the lagoon turned turquoise because that was the color of her eyes. And so That's the legend of the lagoon.
Yeah, that's the legend.
Incan princess is buried at the bottom of it, and that's why it turned turquoise. But yeah, very, very pretty spot. And again, known for all the ski lifts. But I have to say the most interesting part of that particular excursion was not the destination, but the journey. So in order to get to this town of Portillo and the ski resort, you have to go up to these long, like, I think they labeled the curves. I want to say there was close to 30 curves of these hairpin turns up the side of the mountain. And I have a picture of it. It is, you know, like Lombard Avenue in San Francisco. It's like that times a thousand. I have never seen anything like it in my life. It
I had just something wound, like that in Haiti. Yeah.
I mean, that's rough. Up the side of the mountain. That's like rough. It was. Yeah. I mean,
Did you feel sick or?
I mean, luckily, like, we had had lunch at that point. We kind of like, you know, and I know to keep my gaze like kind of forward and not like look down at my phone too much or anything because then you get seasick. But it was just like, is this really happening in there? It was funny. Yeah, they like, label the curves like 29, 30, 31. We're like, holy crap.
They should have a countdown so you know how many to expect. Yeah.
Yeah. We were way up there. So that was, you know, sometimes you get those little moments on a trip that, you know, it's the location that you're headed to is interesting, but at the same time, like the journey, like you just never really know like what it's going to take to actually get there. And you're I love
are we almost trips there? That, and then, you know,
but it takes a little bit of effort to get there, right?
Some grit. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it makes you appreciate it a little bit more. So that was day four. That particular night, I did get invited out for dinner. Oh, I didn't mention my evening stuff. So it turns out that Chile is actually very LGBTQ friendly, and which I did not know. And if we have any LGBTQ community members listening, put Chile on your list because the country in general is very open and accepting and progressive in this area, which just makes me happy as just a human being that, you know, that kind of openness is there. And so on all of my tours, there was either a gay couple or a gay, you know, single person traveling, and I would inevitably end up talking to them. And again, this is another benefit of solo travel where, you know, had I gone with a friend or in a couple situation, I don't think I would have been as open to like chatting with other people, or people wouldn't have been even so open to come to me and talk.
Yeah, it opens you up for new interactions.
It does.
Yeah.
And it, like, people wanted to talk to me because they wanted, like, what are you doing here by yourself? And what brought you to Chile? And, like, they were curious. So I definitely feel like I made more, like, lasting interactions with people on this trip than if I had been there with someone else.
That's my experience frequently when I go by myself.
It feeds my soul, like, to have those kind of friendships. So there was always somebody like adopting me for dinner, like, come with us. And I was like, are you sure I'm not crashing couples time?
That's super fun. They're
like, please. Yeah. So a couple of nights I went out with different people, met this lovely couple from New York, Alex and Andrew. I hope they're listening. We already have plans in the spring to hang out again. And then awesome. Another gentleman who gave me the name of a LGBTQ friendly walking tour in the city. And his name is James. I hope he's listening too. And he, I was on a tour with another gay couple and a gay tour guide my last day in the city. And I actually was great because as a solo female traveler, I felt very safe with that group of people, you know, and just, you know, especially in a city that is accepting of the LGBTQ community. So I don't know if that would have been true in any other country, but in this particular situation, it was perfect. So that particular night after the Inca Lagoon, it was like, the hotel came in handy because I was too tired to go out for dinner. I needed to like elevate my feet because I was swollen from sitting in the car and the plane for so long. And I ended up taking a hot shower, ordering room service. So sometimes you just need to like,
you gotta do it. You gotta
self-care it up.
Yourself. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that was good. And then my last day excursion before my city tour was to the very famous city of Valparaiso and Viña del Mar. They're right next door to each other on the coast. And this, I mean, it is a sprawling city. You know, sometimes you think of coastal towns as like small and quaint and cute. This was a full-on metropolis. I mean, there was the full hillsides of homes. And you could see the beaches from the tops and everything. Very beautiful. But the most famous part of Valpo is the abbreviation is they are a huge hub for urban art. And so I walked in thinking, oh, I'll go see like a few murals. Mm-hmm. There was a mural on every single building every time I turned around. And wow. Not just like, oh, some kids got together and painted some stuff. These are like full on like famous artists. So, you know, I don't remember every detail. We were very lucky that our tour guide, Claudio, was a local of Valpo. He'd lived there all his life. And now he's based in Santiago, but takes tour groups back to his hometown and gives them tours. So it was really getting like the local experience with him.
Yeah.
He even took us past his like childhood home and he's like, that's my bedroom window right up there.
That's so cute.
It was super cute. Quaint. And a lot of places in Chile, the animals kind of roam freely, but they're hardly strays. Like the people in the towns like put food out for them. They have like little houses on the corner of the street and stuff. So all the animals knew him. So they were all like coming up to the tour guide and greeting him. It was so cute. Yeah, all the dogs and cats. This one cat like just like crawled up on his shoulder. It was adorable. So it was really nice, like kind of having like the local experience. And again, he was a chef by trade, so he took us to an amazing restaurant.
That's great.
Wine again at lunch, you know, walk around the city, lots
part of
street
the experience
art. It was a really, really cool experience, the little shopping there. And then headed home that night, my last day tour, I mentioned I did the city tour, saw some of the parks and the memorials in town, learned a lot about the history. Santiago's going through a lot of political unrest right now.
I think I've heard of that on the news.
Like 2018, 2019, there's a huge incident. And like for an entire year, like tens of thousands of people were like protesting in the streets. And honestly, the only thing that stopped it was COVID. And they're currently reworking their constitution. They had a draft, but it was voted down. So now they have to start over and rework it. But so Chile is going through a lot of political stuff right now. And it's evident if you're on Instagram and you're looking at any of my pictures, you're going to notice that all over the city, even churches and things like that, it's covered in graffiti. And, you know, my initial response to that was like, oh, how sad, you know, that all these beautiful things are covered in graffiti. But then I thought, you know what? This is the sign of the times, right? This is where this country is at this point in history. It's kind of cool that I'm sort of here at this time as well.
Yeah.
And so, you know, kind of took it with a grain of salt, try to make it a little bit more positive. But it was definitely very, you know, clear that, you know, the people of Chile are going through some changes and some healing. But anyway, I was thrilled with the trip and how everything went. I was really happy that I did the excursions that I did. I met tons of new people.
I'm glad Chile you has, went. I'm really glad you went because I know you were speculating on it for a while. And I'm glad you went on your own, too, because like we were saying, it's its own experience going by yourself. Mm-hmm. And you really make those deep connections with people. So that's awesome.
It is. And you kind of like I've come home from this feeling like so powerful. Right. Like I feel
if
I can do this, I can do anything. Right.
Absolutely.
And I got nothing but good feedback from other people on the trip that they were just like, good for you. You don't need anybody else. You can do it yourself. You know, it was very like.
Very encouraging.
I was really felt empowered and kind of cleansing in a way. I don't know, it's hard to put it all into words, but
like the negative feelings have kind of like unknotted and melted away.
A little bit. Yeah. And it was definitely like, this is something that is mine, the traveling, that this is something that belongs to me. And I kind of am like,
it's your relationship with yourself. Yeah.
It is.
Too. Yeah.
I will say that, like, if I were to push myself a little bit further out of the box, I might have attempted like the metro. The Chilean metro is actually very good. But I was like, I'm just going to call an Uber. I checked with the hotel staff and I was like, is Uber safe to use here? They said, absolutely. It's totally safe and fine. And, you know, you just use the app and, you know, no problem. So I ended up Ubering around if I needed to get around the city. But most, like I said, most of it was day trip excursions. So that was all with English-speaking guides and with other English-speaking tourists. And I was really sort of prepared to, like, really lean into my, you know, terrible Spanish, but yeah, I didn't need to because I was with mostly English speakers. Yeah. So overall, fantastic. I will say a lot of people that I met on the trip were also just in Santiago for like a day or two because they were on their way somewhere else, whether it was Patagonia, the Lake Districts, heading to the South Point. The bottom part of Chile is actually a launching point for cruises to Antarctica, which Jess is going to tell us about soon. And some people even head over to Argentina.
It's funny you should mention that country, Monica, because I recently had a trip to Argentina, which we'll be talking about in our next episode of The Marvels and Mishaps of Travel.